They pulled up the policeman, they pulled up this blanket for me, and they say, "You tried to hide it for us?" I said, "I'm sleeping. I didn't know what's going on." And they beat the heck out of me. My nose and my ears and my face and my eyes was so one is in Israel, Chaim Shipper from my hometown, and he couldn't stand it. He was standing behind the window and seeing how they beating me up. So he opened the door. He says, "Murderers!" He said, "Why are you beating this boy up? If you had to do a job like he does, you would not touch him." And he said, "Who are you?" And he took off. So he tried to protect me or to speak up. So when I came to work, the foreman come up and says, "What happened to you?" I said, "Nothing." "No, you got to tell something happened to you." I said, "Yes." I said, "The policeman beat me up for no reason." "Come on." Took me into this head man. He was from the supervisor or something. Or he was in a Nazi uniform. And he told him, this foreman says to him, "This policeman, they beat this poor fellow up. And he's such a good worker. What he does." So he says, "You bring him over and you let him do it, his work." I said, "Now I'm in trouble." But I did. I couldn't hide my sores. And they went and they sent for this Teppelman. And I was sitting in the office, the foreman's office, and he come and they bring it, and they didn't have to bring him over. He just came himself. He got an order to come, he came. And he walks in and he sees me. And he gets colors on his face and all kind of things. And this officer comes out to him, he says, "You beat this fella up?" "I don't remember." "You did it or not?" He says, "Yes." "Now you go do his work." And he took him down to my department and he looks at me. I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I know." I said, "I don't know. I was afraid. I was more afraid of him than of them." I said, "I don't know. I didn't say nothing. I didn't squeal or they saw it, what you did to me. You do his work. You think you did it?" He couldn't do even for a second. He got away. He turned the soul around. He's not going to dirty his hands and his boots and his uniform with that. And I used to have a wall with 17 holes. Fire used to come out over my head and over my face. And I used to take this 55 kilo piece of shell and I used to hit it straight in the hole. So the Polak was standing with a big glass, blue glass with a leather apron, with a leather helmet, you know, and he used to pull out those that had to burn the head. And he used to heat it up, and when he pulled out, I had to replace it right away. And they were one hole next to the other one. And if you missed it, when you knocked out the brick, you get it a bigger flame. And I had because I was short, sometimes the size got something to do with it. And I used to take it in my arm here, and I used to shoot it in, and he pulled that one, I shoot it in the other one, he pulled that one, and that they were heating for 10, 15 minutes, that's what I had to rest. When he replaced it, I had to shoot it one next round. When they used to bring in big guys, 6 feet tall, they fell with it because they didn't have this, you had to have the experience, and they fell with a 55 kilo, that's over 100 pounds or more, 110, 120 pounds.
As much as you weighed.
Yeah, and I used to shoot it, and they said, "Why can't you do it? What can you do it?" Oh, I stayed already 6 months on this job, and then I had to, when they pull it out, it was a press, and they had a big mouth, and they squeezed a little mouth like this. So we used to have that tongue, we used to put it in, and when you open this tongue that holds it, and we used to drag it on a railroad track, and the railroad track had holes, and that had a little tail in that fell in, and you couldn't, because of fire, you when you grabbed it, you had to run it, always on the run, and you had to hit it, and when that bounced back, it fell in. You had to have the experience. And the fellow, we had to set up about a dozen of them. There was hot, like we used to call the Hanukkah. It was burning hot. You couldn't stay close. When you stay close, they could catch fire. Or drinking, I was drinking so much, and the salt would start coming out into my shirt. I never shaved. I never took a haircut because I got burned up by this fire all the time. So I remember this Teppelman, they want to put him on the job. I wish he would work at least 5 minutes. So then, he was waiting by the gate. When I returned, He called me into this police station. He said, what do you said about me? I said, I didn't say nothing. He said, why they called me? I said, I don't know why they called you. I said, because they saw what happened. I told them what happened, that you did it. I'm sorry, he says, I didn't mean it. I said, you remember my lunchman told you where I work, and why didn't you stop? That's such a time I went through. I was lucky. A lot of people got beat up from the Germans. I never was called in. I never got the one schmitz over my rear end. Never. I obeyed. I knew hitting was a very bad thing. If they start to hit you, then you were through. I was always on the time, and I always tried to be on time, tried to do the job, tried to obey, and I got beaten. I'm sorry to say it. I got beaten more by Jewish policemen than I got beaten by the Germans.
The Germans were, by this time you knew the difference between the different units. The people in Starjusko, they were Gestapo or they were the Weimar?
They were wearing yellow, the green, yellow uniforms with the, maybe they were more engineers, they were not the SS troops. I think they were wearing red bands with the swastikas, you know, or they were maybe engineers because of ammunition. You got to have trades people, not just, and then they, one time, I have to tell you this, I never will forget, was a Jewish policeman, and when we came to Buchenwald, to Steven, so he comes over to me, and he says, you look like you're a nice fella to me. I said, what do you see so nice about me? He says, you like to be friends with me? I said, listen, naturally, you're Jewish, I'm Jewish. I said, I mean, we breed it. Naturally, I like to be friends. He said, okay, let's be friends. Because everybody didn't got nothing to do with it, you know, like they, how to say. So anyway, I said, I'm going to be friends with you. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I have headaches in the morning. So what do you want? He said, let's be partners. I said, what kind of partner you want to be? He said, the slice of bread that we get tonight, let's share both the slice of bread. And one slice of bread, let's save it for tomorrow morning. And what? And then tomorrow morning, we're going to share the other slice of bread. I said, you know, one slice of bread is not enough even for me. You want me to share the slice of bread? So then I said, I get headaches too in the morning. I said, okay, we become partners. Like we have a day from God. How long I'm going to live, I never forget. He trusts me this piece of bread. One piece of bread, we ate it up. One piece of bread, we shared. No, one we ate it, and one he said it. If $1 million, you would think twice if you could trust me than that slice of bread. Slice of bread was more than. And I was laying all night with the slice of bread under my head. I didn't sleep all night because for two reasons. First of all, for one reason, I was hungry and a piece of bread was under my head. And the second reason, if somebody will find out that I have a slice of bread under my head, he will chuck me to death and will steal this piece of bread. And I was laying all night, and the night was so long that I was praying to God the bell should ring and the morning should come. Finally, the morning came, and I had a piece of bread, and I opened up secretly, and we shared this piece of bread. Here, hundreds of people walk around with the tongue out, and here we two eating a piece of bread. Where we got this piece of bread? So I saw that they're observing me and everything. So I said to him, no more partnership. You know what I went through last night? I didn't sleep all night, and I thought that I'm going to be, somebody's going to chuck me up. And if I will tell him this piece of bread got lost, he would kill me. He would kill me too. He would not believe it that somebody stole this piece of bread from me. So that was my partnership business. You know, when he was a policeman, he could eat when he wanted. Or when he was already a prisoner like me, so he didn't get, so he got ahead. So he was looking for somebody to be a partner, and everybody just walked away from him. He didn't got nothing to do with him. Now another thing, When I came to Detroit, I went to Central High Night School. When I got to Central High Night School, and here I see somebody beats somebody up. So, you know, if you beat up, I was young, that's, I'm talking about 40 years ago almost. So I ran out to see it, what happened. No, what I say, I'm not here 40 years. I came 49. And I see it, he was a Jewish policeman. So he recognized me, I didn't recognize him. He recognized me, he says, Bill, you remember I was a good policeman? I said, I don't remember. How long you were a policeman, I don't care if you were good or bad. I said, you were a policeman, you were no good. And he found a guy, what maybe he hurt this guy, so he took revenge on him, he beat him up. Oh, I didn't know it. I know he was a policeman in my camp. Oh, I didn't know he was a good one or he was a bad one. I don't want false witnesses. I knew the guy from, that he was a policeman, or good or bad, I don't know. So then, this guy got leukemia, and he was in the hospital. So he told his wife that I should go into his room and I should forgive him. So his wife knows me, she's not far from my hometown, about 30 miles. So she comes over to me, she said, Bill, I got one favor. Do me a favor. So what should I do to you? He's come over to Sinai Hospital. My husband is dying from leukemia. And he wants you forgive him. I said, I got nothing to... He don't have nothing to forgive me, and I got nothing to forgive. I said, I remember he was... No, he's not going to die before you come over there. So I walked in this room. He was laying in. He said, Bill, Zalman Boichel, forgive me. I said, I remember you as a policeman. Well, I don't know if you were good or bad. Then he died, so she said, you did a good thing, you came over. And so he got punished this way.
You remember when you were in Cheder, did they teach you about traitors, Jews tattling on other Jews? Was there a discussion about
that? Oh, if you want, no, in the Bible it happened. Well, I forgot that. Yeah, I mean the Bible, you know. Oh, not what the Jews sold Joe to Egypt. I don't want to go in those kind of things. I mean, always, and in the Jewish religion you will find a lot of things. It was. I don't remember. It was those kind of things. It could be a lot of uprisings, like what's in the Warsaw ghetto, could be almost in every ghetto. Only the thing is, one was afraid for the other one. We didn't have too much confidence. Now we're crying, now you swear that we are brothers, brothers keepers, we are brothers. Only, you know, we were in the camps, we were so selfish that everybody, you know, when you're in such a condition, if you're hungry, you just getting wild. You just are just selfish, you're just looking for yourself. Sometimes even if you could take away the bite from your brother, or sometimes I got the one lantern from my hometown, he's in Las Vegas, a car dealer, that his father took his piece of bread away from his mouth and he gave it to his son. The son survived and the father's dead. Now that I'm comparing a father with a son. Only, even two brothers or something, they, you know, if they could get this piece of bread from him, or another spoon of soup from his brother, he'd love to. Or you know that the brother needs this soup, he doesn't have an extra spoon of soup. Or a person becomes selfish. I will tell you, it happened to me, with the selfishness, happened that I had my brother in another camp, and I was working with a Polak in Skarżysko. And I said to this Polak, so he asked me, what town are you? I said, I'm from Sandomierz, from Sosnowiec. Oh, he said, I'm going over there Saturday by train, and I'm going to buy some wheat because my hometown was very known for wheat. I said, wonderful. I said, we live by a Gentile family. Why don't you walk into this Gentile family, ask them if somebody survived from my family? And he went into this Gentile family. He says, is somebody from the Rattenberg survived? She said, yes. One son is in this camp about 2 miles away. So near the Jewish cemetery. So he went over there and he contacted by the wire of my brother. My brother came over. He says, so my brother says to this Polak, he says, the Polak says, you know, I am with Berek in the camp. I work with him. Only I can go out and in, or he can. He said, oh, good. So he gave him some money. He gave him a letter. And he came and he says to me, Berek, you know what? I found your brother. Oh, my God. My brother, he's alive. Fine. He says, he wants you one thing. Here's a letter. My brother wrote me a letter. Bill, send me a list from every name from our hometown is with you. And so I know who's with me, and I took the old names from my hometown. And I give to this Polak. It was a righteous Polak. And every week he went in the mail went like this. And he went and he knew where to meet my brother behind the wire or something. And then my brother contacted all people that have relatives or friends or neighbors or cousins. And all we were related because a small town, we all related over through marriage or through family, through blood. And my brother connected to everything. And he brought me a bunch of letters. And I will tell you, I am scared. If you search me, if I've had something on me, I'm very, so what's the one from my hometown? His name was Bill, also Teitelbaum. I said, look, you know what? I said, here's the letters, and you are working all the time days, and I work 1 week night and 1 week day. I introduced you to this Polak, and you take off the mailing. And he took over the mailing. Right away, he made a business. If I want to send him to my brother a letter, I had to give him $2. If my brother sent me, let's say, $100 zlotys in Polish zlotys, so you already took 5% off. Right away went percentage. I give him just to help each other, right away made a business. That's all. One time my brother was feeling that he's gonna be transferred out. So he gave him 500 zlotys to this Polak to give it to me. So he knew that he makes a business. So he didn't want to give him the 500 zlotys to him. So he said to him, you know, something happened to Berek's brother. I have to see him in person. I have to tell him what happened. What happened? So I tried to arrange it to meet this Polak. I said, what happened to my brother? He said, nothing happened. He said, he has 500 zlotys because I know this, the title one will take a percentage of. So I said, thank you. Thank God nothing happened to my brother. And he made already a business. So honest to God, like we have a God from that one day he received letters. And he's supposed to come to the camp to give the letters. So was they searched by the gate, they took off the clothes to search everybody to naked. So he came with a bunch of letters to me in the department where I used to work. He said, Bill, I got a letter for your brother. Oh, he said, no, take the bunch of letters with you. And when we come home to the camp, you will get the letter. And I didn't know, you know, I'm just a plain fella, and I took the bunch of letters. And I kept them in my pocket or someplace under the shirt. And then we finished working. We come out, and my gosh, my eyes. People standing in the thousands in the Ukraine, searching to naked. If they found the letters on me, that would be wonderful. Or who brought me the letters? I'd have to give this Polak to them. And we stay in the thousands. They taking off the clothes and they search you all over the shoes and oh my gosh. And here we're staying tired 12 hours, we're black, like the guy was cleaning the chimney, we were black in it. So our policeman was Yussel. So we said to Yussel, why don't you go over to the guard and tell him that we, from the Granat, the heavy, hard-working people, we can't stay, we have to stay till midnight, or maybe later than that, and let us search us first. And we go through. So this policeman was a nice fella, I hope he's alive. So he went over to this guard, he says, look, I'm from the Granatin, you know me. And he said, I got a group from 80, 90 people, they dropping dead. Why don't you search him, and I bring him over and search him over first. He said, go ahead, bring him. And we came over and they opened the gate, they even didn't touch us. Because so dirty we were, filthy. And we went through to the camp. Then he comes running over. He said, they found that you did letters? I said, no. They took me, they took off my clothes from me. I said, yes. He said, you want to save your neck and you try to, why you did it? Why didn't you they burn it? Put a match, burn it off, dispose it. So you want to put me in, and what would happen if they cut the letters on me? He said, that's what I tried to bring up, was selfishness. He wanted to save his back. He didn't care you probably get caught. And
so, if you received money from...
From my brother. You could buy yourself. I didn't have nothing for the money anyway. I was so naive. One time they were searching to... It was very hard to hold money. So, you didn't know where to hide it. So, when you walk through the gate, you had to have the hand high. And if he didn't like you, he could come and search you. And if you had the money, you could buy an extra piece of bread.
From who?
From another Jewish fellow, from this carpenter, from this plumber. You could buy an extra piece of bread. Or you could buy yourself a shirt, or you could buy yourself a pair of shoes. Money was very, only how you could have it. Another thing with money was two brothers, Goldman was there. And we lived in a barrack that you could trust each other. So when they were wearing boots, and the pants, they had it inside in the boots, and they had the dollars, American dollars, and they had it in the pocket. They had a hole in the pocket, in case if they tell them to raise their hands, so this fell in in the boots. And they were sleeping on top of the bunker. And so it looks like they dropped in this with the racks wrapped up, the dollars, and we came in the camp. And I slept in. He went and he pulled off his boots, and this package fell out, and he didn't think about it. And I was laying on, I was got a bottom bed, and I was laying, you know, what a hungry person looks. The ice, I got all over it, and I saw on the floor something is laying. So I went and I walked over, and I picked up, and I went back on my bed. I unwrapped it, American dollars. Oh my gosh. Now, double scare, what I'm going to do with him? So anyway, in those brothers, they're fighting. You had it, he had it, you had it, he had it. He said he, and they were fighting, they were almost killed themselves. And I'm laying on bed, like, I'm telling you the honest truth, not that I'm trying myself honest. I said, what happened, one will kill the other one, it will be on my conscience. And even if I have the dollars, if I have to go through the gate twice, into who I'm going to sell the dollars, Polish money, it was easy to exchange it. Where am I have to exchange it? So it was a problem for me to have the dollars too. And I didn't know what I'm like. So I said, I walked over to the brothers. I said, what are you fighting about? He said, don't mix it in. You are an outsider. We are two brothers. We're not going to hurt each other. I said, what are you fighting about? So he said, don't mix. I said, I want to know what you're fighting about. I said, I know what you're fighting about. What do you know? I said, I found out what you were fighting about. Are you looking in it? I said, yeah, I unwrapped it. I looked at it. Now, they were mad because I looked at it in it, that I know they have dollars. And I gave them back. And this time, even my son did not give back to our father, even my brother to her. I didn't know what to do with it. So I gave them back. And then they were mad at me. They at least could say, okay, we award you with something, we give you a slice of bread or something, we do something for you, what you found it. And then, so they said, they were mad at me because I looked at you, what was this package? I never forget. I was very scary. If they come close to me, if I had something not legal, I lost my pants. Sometimes at work, I'm very conscientious. Let's say, if I have to charge you $4.98 a pound, if I charge you $5 a pound, I will look for you and take back the package you're away at. That's already me. I was in Italy. People went over to Staped. People went over to Austria, and they brought over this and or they had watches, or they went with the diamonds, or they went with clothes, or they went with that. I stayed in the kibbutz. I didn't move the place. I want to go to Israel. I want to go to Palestine. Or they didn't want to send me because I was Now, such a kibbutz, what the kibbutz belonged to Irgun Tzvi Lumi, they were thinking that I will go and join Begin's group.
This was in Italy?
In Italy.
You call it a kibbutz. It was a...
No, a kibbutz, not a real kibbutz like they have it in Israel. I was in a kibbutz at it.
And this was where in Italy?
In the Marina di Luca. By the Mediterranean, by the Adriatic Mediterranean. In the Mediterranean Sea.
And it was sponsored by the Irgun?
Maybe it was sponsored by the Irgun. I just went in because I was a Beitar when I was a youth. And I went in and I missed my youth life. And I wanted to live it up. We had lectures over there. We had dances. We danced the Hora. I used to stay on the roof guarding the Israeli flag, you know.
What year?
In 1945, 46, 47, 48.
And... were you trained militarily there?
No, I took a trade over there, I'd be a fisherman. So I used to go on the sea, and I learned how to put nets, and I used to catch fish, and I used to eat raw fish. We used to grab the little sardine, or the smelts, so we used to break off the head, and eat them raw, and I saw it, I started vomiting. Then I got used to them, I used to eat the raw fish, and everything. We had a nice Jewish fellow, a Lithuanian from Litva. And he was a Navy man or something. And he trained us to be fishermen. When we come over to Palestine, we will become fishermen. Well, I never made the shores.
It was difficult to get to Palestine.
It was from other organizations, but they were under Ben-Gurion. So they had Aliyah.
Which organizations would those be?
The Atzioni, Shomer HaTzair, Daguda, three Jews, 10 organizations. And I happened to go into the Beitar kibbutz, and they said that you're going to follow me. And we didn't, we talked about Joseph Trumpel, though, we talked about Herzl, we talked the Jewish history, but I missed it, because, you know, I lived in this kibbutz, and then they said it for this kibbutz, they said it for this kibbutz, and our kibbutz, they never said it. So that's when I got time to look around, because I didn't, by the truth, I didn't want to come to the United States. Because I figured, I lived through, only the family sent me letters and they said, you're the only survivor from such a large family. Come. So I came here. Well, I was in Israel twice. Yeah, I would love to live in Israel.
Are you going to retire there?
No. They don't need me. They need young blood. They don't need the retirees.
Have you ever gone back to Poland?
No. For what? To see the graveyards? Or they will kill me? After the war, was the Kielce program that I have from my hometown, and she lives in New York. They stabbed her, they cut her, they killed so many Jews. After the war, I'd like to go to Poland. They killed her not far from my hometown? No. Never. If you give me a ticket with a plane, just to go in, to stop off for half an hour and get up on the plane and come back, I would never want to go. I would never want to step on the Polish soil.
What do you think about the Solidarity movement?
I don't know. That's to me, I don't know what he is. He's a union man or he's not a union. Is he a union man? Reagan supports the union over there and he breaks the union here. I don't understand this. If Reagan is so interested that the Polish should have such a strong union, so why he breaks the union here? The pilots and the controllers and every union, every now is at such a law that the Supreme Court, the High Supreme Court passed it, that you declare bankruptcy or you go to receivership, you can break the contract and hire the same people. What Cunningham did with EPCO. That's Cunningham. Now it's EPCO, so what they do it. No. Here they're breaking the union, there they're building the union. I don't understand. Maybe I'm not smart enough. I understood that they will take us to work, and we're going to work, only they're going to take my father and mother and little children, the 5-year-old, 4-year-old children, put them in a boxcar and send them to like sheep to the Geshemites. Nobody believed it. When it happened in Germany, all right, that they took away the properties from the German Jews, they took away the rights, they took away the citizenship from the German Jews, and they'd send them to labor camp. All right, the labor camp, so labor is war. And they're claiming that we the Jews, right away, we are the how to say, the guinea pig. We, right away, is something, what happened here. Right away, the Jews in Germany, the Jews were in a high position. The Jews were bankers, Jews were professors, Jews were, take an archibunker here. He wants a good lawyer, he goes to Goldman or to Schulman or to Sullivan. Or the Jew is the good lawyer, the good doctor. And then something happens right with the Jew. We are inside the Poland. They want a good lawyer, they want a Jew, they want a good doctor. They went to a Jewish doctor, or they went to Germany to look for a Jewish doctor, or they went to Austria looking for a Jewish doctor. Poland didn't have enough doctors. They always, they think a lot about the Jews. When it comes to destroy the Jew, the first one. We bring the culture, we bring the music, we bring the everything, the sign, the everything what you got in the world, we, everything. When it comes to something, we are the first two. That's all. So, you can't find no justice. I couldn't believe it myself when I was liberated, that when I come home to Poland, when I will see a Pole, a Jew, a Landsman, a cousin, we will carry each other. What we went through, that's as impossible, was that impossible. If you come over to me, you will say, Bale, I will see you in 1949 in America. I would think that you something happened, something. It was impossible to have such a might, have such a strength, such an army. How could the German army be destroyed? It's impossible. I remember when I was liberated in Czechoslovakia in Prague, and when I came out on the road to Stanislav, civilian with a machine gun, he said, where are you going? Robbing our Czechs? Are we hungry? He said, lay down. Wait, you will see it. And didn't take a half an hour. A whole German army came with no rifles. Only they got an order to go from Detroit to New York, and they marched without guards. Didn't have no guards. And we got up from the ground. We were hiding on the roads. We got up in those stripes. When they saw us, it's like we Jewish, we say three salvation, like we resurrected. We got up and they went down. And honest to God, like we have a right to God, I couldn't believe it. That I could walk over to Germany and touch him or grab him his bread box or bread bag or something. And right away we took off their bread bags and he had a watch. They went out after the jewelry. I just grabbed his bread bag and I ran to the camp and I opened up and I saw a can of sardine, a piece of butter and a piece of bread. I just helped myself and I put it on the pillow with it under the straw bag. And I said, I'm going again. I ran over again. They're already gone. And when I come back, so those people I couldn't move. They moved over to my bed. They got everything what I got. And I come back. I missed the Germans. I missed my food. You see, I was not satisfied with one time. So I want to make another turn. Then I started to eat. I got the diarrhea. People died. Diarrhea was going out in front, from the back. And I started going out. I went to the doctor. I said, doctor, take off the diarrhea. He said, don't stop eating. I said, for so many years I didn't eat. You want me to stop eating now? He said, the only way, take a bread and burn and make charcoal and eat the charcoal. I took a loaf of bread, I took a wire, made a fire, and I put this loaf of bread in the fire, burned for charcoal. I was eating the charcoal, and my stomach stopped. And that's if you get the diarrhea, go on the drugstore, just ask for charcoal powder. That will stop you right away.
Charcoal.
They're selling in the drugstore. And I ate this charcoal, and I stopped right away. I came to the United States. My aunt made me toast, and she gives me burned bread. I said, I don't eat the burnt bread. Till today, I don't eat the toast. And that's, you see, that's, we went through, and people don't forget. And a lot of people forgot of it.
Did you tell your children what you told me?
I told them, they don't. They don't know. They're young. I mean, they watch the Holocaust. They see this. I tried to explain to them. I made a tape. I want to play it for you. I mean, it's hard. I know. My children, maybe if they be more educated, if they be more involved, or they're not so much involved, you know, and they're not, they just high school graduate children. I honestly got, last year we had in Washington, the Holocaust, I went over there and I was looking, had my name, Deva, and I was looking. I couldn't find it. Finally, I found one guy. Only I know him when we got liberated. I didn't look for the living one. I was looking for a dead one. Maybe from my hometown. Yeah, I stayed with the guy in the line to buy a coffee. He said, where are you from? I said, Poland, with Sandomierz. He said, you know, here's one guy from Sandomierz. I said, where? I ran, he showed me. I said, I know him, he lives in New York, he's got a wife and two children. And he brought the wife and children, Hamchi, he's a singer, I know who survived, who's alive, we know from each other. Oh, I was looking at the guy, but I didn't know that he survived. And all of a sudden, I met him, and I faced him. For those guys, maybe my brother, maybe my sister, maybe a cousin, maybe some. I had so many cousins, so many relatives. Nobody. I'm lucky that I found the family here in the United States. If I would not find the United States my family, I found my mother, sister's daughter in Israel, in Haifa. So I go to her, and we write to each other. We like sisters and brothers. Only good I found my relatives here. I came and I know that I got a roots, but I got family. The same grandfather, the same great-grandfather, and my father and the uncle. The uncle just died. He was almost 90 years old, William Rattenberg. And we got a lot of Rattenbergs. And we have a Rattenberg family club. And I'm the whole, when the family comes together, I entertain them. Because we are together, and then we collect the money, and they put in a quarter, and they say, this the birthday or anniversary or graduation, confirmation, and I have a loud voice, and I announce it, and everybody enjoys it, and they're staying with the money, and everybody wants to put it in. The good doesn't go for me. And then I collect the money, and they give it to the treasurer. In the summertime, we have a picnic. In the wintertime, Hanukkah, we have a Hanukkah party for our children, for our grandchildren. We come together. Summertime, we got a cousin, Larry Ribiat. He's got a swimming pool, so we go out to Larry Ribiat's swimming pool, and we enjoy the whole family. You know Larry Ribiat? Ribiat.
No.
Ribiat, the lawyer, Mitch, you know it?
I know Mitch.
No, that's what I was telling you about his father, but I didn't let him beat him up. I met his father in Germany, in Bremen. He was holding Mitch on his hand. Yeah, Mitch is my best friend here. If you see Mitch, when they brought his father, I said, oh no, you can touch him. I was at Mitch Bar Mitzvah, Mitch's wedding, his sister's wedding.
How many Jews did you say lived in your town before the war?
About 800 families.
How many do you think survived?
You can count them on the fingers. A great portion survived in Russia. Or they left Russia. They're now in Israel, they're in New York. And from the concentration camps, I don't know if they're in Toronto, in Montreal, in New York, or 200-300, that'd be the most.